Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Alexandra Hemmingsley.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
You are welcome. We are welcome. You are a journalist and author of X in the City and Running Like a Girl.
Yes.
And most recently, Leap In.
Yes.
And Leap In is your journey to swimming.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So I'm just going to posit a theory that, like, with Running Like a Girl, especially after X in the City, you were sort of discovering love of yourself from the inside.
Yes, definitely. And especially of my body. But I think I was someone who was operating almost exclusively from my brain and my emotions beforehand. Like, my body was like maybe a kind of pet that I had to look after, was carrying around behind me. And it was sort of discovering that relationship and being comfortable with that was Running Like a Girl, definitely.
And then you get married, you're all loved up, you live in Brighton, and you've never been in the sea in Brighton.
Yeah.
I've been in the sea more than you had.
I know. It's one of those mad things that you sort of take for granted. We lived right on the seafront as well. And I loved the sea, and I loved the thing that I'd come home from something in London late at night and get out of the taxi to go into my house, and you could smell the sea and you could hear it. And if you catch a taxi along the seafront, it's... I remember the first time I was in Brighton, and I caught a taxi along the seafront at night. And I looked up, I was looking at my phone, and then I looked up, and to my right, it was just all darkness. And I said to the taxi driver, oh my God, they've had a power cut in half of the city. And he was like, no, we're on the seafront road. That's the sea. There's no lights there. And so it was like, it was massively there and present in my life, but not fully acknowledged.
Okay, so you had the same relationship with the sea as you used to have with your body.
Kind of, yeah.
Separate being over there.
Yeah.
Well, I would say, I want to hear your relationship, but it struck me reading Leap In that, you know, when running was sort of united you with your body and love, self-love, that swimming broadened you to trust that someone else could love you. It was sort of twinned with your husband and belief and belonging and faith.
And yeah, and I met a lot of people through swimming, whereas running was quite a solo endeavor. I think when I sort of took up running and learnt to run, it was something I did by almost exclusively by myself for really, really, for years and years and years. And it's something that you can kind of... do listening to music. You can isolate yourself, you can go for a run and kind of cut yourself off quite well. But with swimming, and also the thing with running was all I had to do was just get up and run. But with swimming, it involved learning a skill as an adult, which was this huge act of vulnerability to say, people are perfectly happy to say, oh, I can't do that, you know, whether it is, I don't know, tennis or fast arithmetic when the bill comes in a restaurant or whatever, you know, I'm just not interested in that, I can't do it. What's really scary is to say, I can't do that, help me, I want to be able to do it. Especially as an adult, it's something children do all day, every day. You know, I'm always surprised my five-year-old nephew was so unashamed about saying, what does that word mean? And he'll just ask completely without... Whereas you see grown-ups, you know, you get to post-adolescence and you try and blag it or bluff it. And I couldn't do that with swimming, so I had to kind of make that transition to kind of allowing myself to be seen to be vulnerable, so I had to learn to swim. And then I had to kind of, with swimming in the sea, you can't really just get in by yourself unless it's a beautiful summer's day, flat like a pancake. So you swim with people, which kind of involves sorting out times and working out what people want to do, and that sort of give and take, and yeah, it opened me up. And there's a real democracy in the water as well, that you can usually tell if someone's going to have a good, you know, running stride or be relatively speedy or whatever. But with swimming, if you've been swimming all your life and you have a beautiful stroke, you can be 70 and still swim as fast as a 20-year-old, because the 20-year-old won't be moving efficiently through the water and or confident with the waves or rolling their body. And it's that adaptability. With running, it was just like, I just threw myself at it, and then I realised quite quickly that with swimming, you can't just hurl yourself at the sea and hope for the best. That's really dangerous.
It's also one of those things, because I grew up swimming, you know, the east coast of the States, you know, big waves.
Oh, yeah.
And, riptide.
More surfy.
But my father, and I know your sort of sporting experience has been a way in with your father.
Mm.
But my father used to swim in the sea all the time, and we'd sit there and watch him do laps. And for me, that was such a wonderful, to me, a very comforting sight.
It's very relaxing to watch other people swimming, isn't it? If you're in a swimming pool and there's just people doing lengths and it's all sort of churned up and foamy, it's not especially relaxing because the splash and it bounces back off the walls back onto you. But watching someone swimming in the sea, which I would be running for years of my life, I'd be training for all these marathons up and down the seafront in Brighton and Hove, and go all the way from Shoreham Harbour to Salt Dean and do the whole strip. And you'd see swimmers, and I'd find it quite sort of like they were fellow travellers. And really, you can watch the ripple of where on a clear day, follow their path and see the sea that they're leaving behind them. There is something almost as meditative about watching it as there is about doing it.
Yeah, I guess that's why people have fish tanks.
Yeah.
Seeing the fish swim. But yeah, it was a sight that my sister found terrifying.
Really?
Well, because the sea, as you, I think, experienced, you had a sort of terror of the sea.
Yeah.
Because for me, I feel like I have a very healthy fear of the sea. It is
bigger,
way bigger than you.
Yeah.
And anyone who's been rolled by waves, you know,
And it is unknowable. If you watch, if you tried to educate yourself, if you made it your life's work, which people have, you get to the point where the biologist or whatever say, and then down there we'd stop knowing.
Yeah.
It's so deep and so unknowable that there's no... The only reassurance that you can have is that you've developed an inner strength if you can reconcile that you'll never know. That in itself is that's braver than going, oh, I don't care about sharks, or whatever. I mean, you should care about sharks a bit to educate yourself, but that it's a fool's game to try and control everything in your life anyway. So trying to know what's always around you in the sea, it's undoable. So the sort of peace of going, well, okay, that's the magic golden spot.
Yeah, and I think it is a perfect metaphor, and it was a perfect path for you, because while it is unknowable, while it is violent, we float.
Yeah.
It's magical.
I really float.
We float.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And we're held.
We're mostly water, and we are held, and there's something really beautiful about how, with most sport, and it's encouraged, there's a lot of language around, a lot of exercise about feel the burn, and, you know, words like shredding and
punishing
and,
words.
Yeah, there's a really sort of harsh vocabulary around a lot of sport, like that's what you should expect. And I can remember the first time I did a long distance swim, I was prepared to feel like I would after maybe a half marathon or a marathon, where it's a good ache because you know you've worked really hard, but you can feel the impact in your hips and your knees of all those times you hit the pavement and all that kind of the thud of that many steps. You carry it home with you. And I got out of the water. I'd swum like 3.5 kilometres. And I thought, when is the pain? It was like I almost felt kind of...
cheated.
No, like floaty. Like just the purest tiredness I've ever, ever, ever known. But I'd associated tiredness with sport with some sort of impact pain, and I'd stopped being afraid of it. It wasn't an injury. You could make sense of the relationship between the feet on the pavement and the judder through your body. But swimming just doesn't do that. You come out, and you know, maybe if you swim 10K, you might have sore shoulders, but it's still not impact pain in the same way. And it's heaven. It is heaven to feel tired, but to not feel any pain is extraordinary.
Which is also one of those things, which is why it's, you know, when I was growing up, they called it a lifetime sport.
Yes,
you know, you don't see people past the age of, I don't know, 14 doing gymnastics. Whereas swimming, you know,
or if you do, they're a meme of some kind.
But yeah, you know what I mean? Swimming, Where my father lives, who's 87, people swim every day.
And I love that about swimming, and that was one of the things that made me most fall in love with it, especially with the cold water, is that you start to see those people and you kind of see them shuffle out of the changing room and there's an awkwardness and you can see a scar running down the side of their hip or shoulder and you can see that they've, you know, suffered an injury or suffered pain and then you know that you can't know what they'll be like in the water. And I've seen that, you know, women 30, 40 years older than me get in and it's like watching something in almost slow motion, watching them loosen up and elongate in the water as the pressure releases, they're not standing, they're weightless, and it's just the most gorgeous sense of relief to watch someone, and that's just the physical side of it. Then there's the emotional relationship that must be going on with all these people, so yeah.
And tell me, I want to go a bit into your personal immersion in swimming, because you started, you know, with a wanting to swim in the sea, live in Brighton, starting with your marriage and realizing that this was bigger. So you started on this thing, but then you went to a swim meet, like your first
Event.
Yes.
Yeah, the river swim.
Yes. But why did you not tell your husband the true nature of that trip at first?
I didn't know what that we were.
Because you had planned the swim, but you in the book you say you hadn't. You just said, "Oh yeah, we're going to the Littlehampton that weekend," but didn't say why.
Yeah. Well, I think I didn't definitely know that I would feel confident enough to do it, but I knew that the people who'd been on my course were planning to do it because I took this year-long swimming course, which sort of followed a school term. So it sort of started in September, literally learning front crawl from scratch. And then by the spring, we were getting back into open water. And I wasn't sure if I'd feel strong enough, if I'd be courageous enough, because I was really, even once we got to April, I was still really struggling to feel confident when I couldn't touch the edge or touch the bottom or whatever.
So I didn't want to commit, but
I knew I wanted to go because I wanted to support and watch. I thought maybe I'll just do it next year or something. But then I did. I was okay in the end.
And how is that? Talk to me about how emotionally this is, how it's been different from running.
Well, obviously, I can't do it the other way around and know how swimming would have helped me navigate, like, the final throes of single girl 30-something life. And I can't ever know what running would have done for me during IVF. But the thing that the emotional click for me with swimming, because during learning all of this swimming was not to write a book. I was writing a book about boxing and ballet and gender and how similar boxing and ballet are and how similar the psychology is. And I thought it was fascinating. And it was a terrible book that is now in the bin where it belongs. So all of this was meant to be my recreational safe space. but the thing that made it kind of become transcend into like a magical thing for me was that I started doing IVF about 6 months after we were married, six months a year, and I wasn't really prepared for it. I wasn't prepared at all for what it would do to my body or my relationship with my body, which I'd kind of spent the previous 5 or 6 years really fighting to feel fit and to realize that sport wasn't this exclusive area where the sporty people who were in a country club when they were growing up were allowed to be only.
Wasn't just, as you said before, thin or win.
Yeah, exactly. I'd really discovered that, you know, exercise is what you make it and it's your journey and it's only ever what you're getting out of it that matters. And that was a really fantastic thing that I went through with running. And then obviously Running Like a Girl had come out, and I'd spent 2 or 3 years telling women, you know, all you have to do is try your hardest and it's within you and all this kind of thing. And then I found IVF really difficult to navigate emotionally, partly because the thing that happens when you start to take all the drugs is that you stop being able to have any clear sense of what is your personality or your response or your emotions and what is simply a side effect of the drugs that you would never otherwise be feeling. So you feel a kind of disconnect of, like, is this just who I am now? Am I just this needy now? Is this what being this age feels like for everyone? Or whether to just push it to one side and go, you know what, in 5 weeks, I won't even remember feeling like this. And it's impossible to tell what's going on emotionally in that respect. And also, I put on a lot of weight. I didn't even have running bottoms that would fit anymore, so I stopped running. I felt like I'd had my wings clipped. And during this, this began just when I was able to confidently swim. So it completely was a lifeline of just at the point where I was feeling disappointed in my body and also feeling guilty for feeling disappointed in my body because I just devoted the last few years of my life to evangelizing about not never feeling let down by your body, whatever it brings you.
Well, and then you know, falling into, so you fell into that trap in singlehood and then fell into the trap in impending parenthood of, like, oh, it's my fault. Let's blame me.
Exactly.
Let's find ways that I'm inadequate.
Yeah, and then compounded by, and now you've told all these people that they're not inadequate. You're a letdown to them too. And so even though I wasn't swimming very far and I wasn't swimming competitively, it became this tiny little kind of area of solace through last winter, where I just kept swimming outdoors through the whole winter, and it was a this small way of exceeding my expectations of myself consistently and forcing myself to get outside all of those times and see the sea, see the horizon, see some other people, not talk about myself, talk about them, talk about what the group was doing, talk about the waves, discuss the tide. All of the surrounding stuff was massively, massively comforting in a way that I felt a million miles away from, like, yeah, go spinning, put on my cool new clothes from this expensive boutique and just feel the burn. That there was no part of me that could understand even going into a studio to pursue that kind of thing. It was nature and seeing tides I found incredibly comforting to know that, well, tomorrow it will just look different.
And giving yourself perspective, literally putting yourself into perspective.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
That there's a horizon there, and there's little me here. And
exactly.
There are bigger things and there are other things, and yet I'm a part of this.
Yeah, and the sort of comfort in swimming with other people when you're in the sea where you can't leave someone behind and swim off into the distance and become kind of aggressive about it. I was not doing, you know, obviously if you're in a triathlon training group, you're going to run off and leave the people behind. That's the deal with those guys. But the way that I was doing it, I found very kind of unifying and reassuring.
Mm. Well, I also had a thought that you're sort of, through all of this, you're sort of discovering the elements, and that sort of running was earth.
Yeah.
And that in your dreams, you're always flying, so that was air. And swimming was obviously water. And
the next step is fire. What's my flame ball book going to be?
Motherhood.
Oh, God.
That's fire.
Okay.
So that's the next one.
Yeah.
And good luck with that.
Okay, duly noted.
Yeah, exactly. But let's talk a little bit about the history, just in very brief. Obviously, it's as you point out, as long as we are, but a little bit about the history of swimming. And, you know, Ben Franklin, I'm going to just give you some highlights to fill in for me. Ben Franklin, and also front crawl versus side stroke, because as an American, I'm all about the side stroke.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to be used over here. It's not even really discussed.
I don't know, everybody seems to want to run themselves ragged. Me just picking a cherry, as we say, pick a cherry, put it in the basket. Pick a cherry, put it in the basket.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I was really shocked when I started taking the swimming lessons. I mean, I could swim at the beginning, but in that sort of summer holiday, do width of breaststroke to cool off way, which was why I was so terrified when I first got in the sea, because I realized how profoundly inadequate that was for anything beyond, you know,
paddling.
Beautiful Mediterranean environment. I was really shocked when I realized that front crawl is an invention of barely 100 years, and that it has a sort of interesting history of its own, coming from sort of the Amazon combined with, you know, sort of crazy Victorians bringing people over for exhibition swims in sort of Victorian age, and everybody just staring at the savages and how they whirl their arms around, and then sort of 18 months later going, oh yeah, you do go a bit faster, don't you? It's like, well done guys with your empire. And that's just sort of been refined over the, it's not been a static discussion what front crawl is. It's kind of been moving. So there are people who are, I mean, I was taught to swim in the 80s, and I swim with people, some people who taught to swim in the 50s or the 60s, and everyone's been told something slightly different because it has always been this sort of work in progress what front crawl is. Whereas breaststroke and side stroke, you can go and look at the first book about swimming in the UK, which is from Tudor times and was written in Latin for gentlemen, because getting in the water was just something that commoners did. It was either sort of martial, it was for war, or it was, you know, you kind of slopped in when you were getting the horses fed at the end of the day, and it wasn't a gentlemanly pursuit till sort of, yeah, Tudor era, and that was all about the side stroke and the breaststroke. Front crawl was still happening in the Amazon. They were oblivious.
And I love the idea that Ben Franklin came over here,
yeah,
and was demonstrating swimming
such
in the Thames.
Such a passionate advocate for swimming. And he invented swim fins, which looked a bit like those tennis rackets that old explorers would wear on their feet to go through the snow at the time. And he has an amazing description about, there's a letter that I found that he'd written to a merchant who was obviously, must have been quite inconvenient to be a merchant and to be terrified of the sea if your job is literally to spend your entire life going back and forth to places on the sea. And he'd
without
written this
drones.
Yeah, this really impassioned letter trying to explain to him how to get some confidence in the water, and in sort of saying you just need to get an egg and throw it a little bit ahead of you, and then just sort of reach towards it. And it seems quite unnecessarily complicated, but I could see from what he was saying what he was trying to get this guy to do, like the sequence of like follow this thing, and then you, before, it's like, you know, you let go and you're teaching someone to ride a bike, and you say, I'm still holding.
Well, it's also still, you know, getting kids to put their face in the water. When they're scared,
yeah,
of putting their face in the water, it's the same thing. Oh,
well,
dive
it's
down
terrifying.
For this.
Of course,
dive, yeah.
You're completely right to be scared of putting your face in the water, because putting your face in the water, if it's not deliberate and considered, will instantly kill you. It's not in a rush. That's the thing. Like, and people who are like, oh, I can't believe, have you heard so-and-so can't even swim? They're so scared of swimming. It's like, that is not an unreasonable thing to do. People drown and water kills. It's a reasonable thing to try and learn to swim in order to manage that fear and manage the not dying.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I think that's the very reason why I'm a good swimmer and a strong swimmer, and
yeah,
always has been,
is
because I'm
terrified
of drowning.
Yeah.
Like, that's my biggest fear. Like,
exactly.
Drowning, that would suck, you know?
Well, that's the thing with running. My biggest fear, and with all these marathons and all these miles, was physical pain, which I did get over relatively quickly, because when you can reconcile what's caused it and that it will go away, you kind of can take it. And shame. I was afraid of coming last. I was afraid of falling over. I was afraid of the truck at the London Marathon sweeping the bottles away, kind of going, beep,
with you.
Beep, beep, yeah. But with swimming, it was like, oh, okay, it's time to grow up, because what I'm actually scared of now is dying.
Yeah,
I'm older now.
That's actually a real thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And also, there's no coming back from that, whereas you learn a valuable lesson and pick yourself up if you trip over when you're running a race, and, you know, people will tut and run around you, and then you'll stand up and go, oh, okay, it wasn't as bad as all those nights I spent worrying about it. But when you drown, that is the end.
That's that.
Yeah.
Excellent. So do you recommend everyone leap in?
Well, not immediately if you can't swim, but in a metaphorical sense, I think what both books have really tried to express as best as I can is that what is so often stopping people from doing things, especially physically, is this sort of self-perceived barrier of not allowed to, shouldn't, you won't be able to. And it is only ever in one's mind. There are there are things you can do, swimming lessons you can take, stuff you can sort out for yourself that will open this world up to you, and to sort of live more fully and less afraid would be to leap in the larger sense, rather than just off a cliff.
And just because you're scared of something doesn't mean that's no good reason not to do it.
Yeah, and just because you're scared of something doesn't mean that your fear is unjustified or unreasonable. Quite often you're scared of something because it is dangerous. So don't be ashamed.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you for having me.
Let's see. Then I just need to take a picture. Mm-hmm. It's loading.
Alex Hemmingsley's Leap In is available now.